Welcome to Criticalize Inspiring Leaders podcast, our series where we'll be speaking to executive and non-executive directors about what's really going on in boardrooms today, getting insights into the key issues around business strategy, stakeholder management, and leadership. My name is Mark Barber, Director of Content at Criticalize, and today we'll be talking to you from our CEO Sustainability Retreat, where we've been discussing the immense challenge of how companies are to make their contributions to net zero. Sharing their thoughts on this topic, we have two Criticalize board mentors, Francesca Exri, who is a portfolio non-executive director who sits on the boards of companies including Air France, Henderson High Income Trust, and Hafner Energy. And joining Francesca, we have Mark Spellman, a non-executive director at Barrow Hapold and a strategic advisor to the World Economic Forum on accelerating its digital transformation initiative. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If we start with just some reflections and takeouts from the retreat, and I'm happy to go first on this to kick it off. From my perspective, I think some of the things that have stood out is there are reasons to be optimistic, which maybe goes against what we've been reading about a lot in the media lately. I think the investment in clean energy exceeded $1 trillion in 2022, matching the investment in fossil fuels for the first time. 90% of that went into renewable energy and electric vehicles. And we've had a record-breaking year of investment for the first half of 2023. So the discussions have really focused around how capital and financing is key. I think I liked the idea of ESG as now being a mainstream business metric. It's something that has been maligned, but I like the phrase that it keeps boards and executives' feet to the fire. We had a session on generative AI and the potentially colossal impact Gen AI could have around something like Scope 3 and how it aggregates data. But then there's also, we need to query how the technology is being used and some of the dangers around that. And then I guess this point around companies that are going to be the most successful in the future will merge sustainability and digital if they're going to demonstrate commercial results. And none of this can be siloed. Lots to go through there, and that doesn't even touch on, I mean, we discussed nature. I mean, we've covered lots of different areas here, and I'm sure we'll get into that as well. But Francesca, if I could come to you, and we've just come off a panel discussion, haven't we, on boards and culture, so we've covered a sort of full scope of topics. But what do you think sort of stood out for you in terms of the discussions?
The fact that various speakers made a very convincing case on the fact that sustainability is equal to a profitable future. And if you look at it that way, you would get a lot more momentum within boards and companies and the press about this. It's like, it's about profitable future. That's
it's not an either or.
No, exactly. And the best way to do it is to make sure that you embed sustainability conversations within the strategy, because it's a lot easier not doing it as an add-on.
Yeah. And I think that came through with the conversation about ESG. For all of the complaints, I guess, about the reporting burden, there is this view that, okay, well, if you're reporting on it, you're tracking on it, and if you're tracking on it, you can make decisions. So it's kind of that, and that's how you'll get change.
So just building on that, I think we're at a very interesting point in time now where the whole sustainability agenda is going to be very much on the sort of global radar screen. We're just coming up to COP28 at the end of November, yep, beginning of December. We've seen the politicisation of certain aspects of climate, whether you look at it through the US or actually what's going on in the UK with some of the recent announcements. And so this is a very important, I think, time for boards to be thinking about the sustainability agenda. And I always start with saying, really understand what are the signals, macro signals, and also the signals in the business. Let's be honest, which is to say, we're on track at the moment for 2.4 degrees. We're not taking enough carbon out of the atmosphere. If you look at the recent data on UK species loss since 1970, it's something like sort of 70%. So there's some very important signals to pick up. And so the key question for all of us is, how do we then scale up what we're doing in our, I think, at the micro level in our businesses? And increasingly, I think what sustainability is all about is, how do we bring, if you like, climate action, biodiversity right into the core of our strategic making in our businesses. And to me, it's that sort of understand the signals, think about the scaling, look at what that means in terms of the way that we approach systemically how our businesses are operating and running. And that's why now is such a good time to be talking about sustainability.
Okay. From your perspective, Francesca, would you agree with that? And I think if I could bring as well, there's an interesting conversation around where larger companies are on this versus smaller growth companies, if you will. And I wondered if you could sort of expand on some of the sort of tensions there that need to be.
Yes, so I'm on a variety of boards in different size, and I find that, in my experience, larger companies happen to have more resources and are able to embrace this much better. I am on the board of Air France. Sustainability is completely core of every single decision that we take, certainly any CapEx decisions. There's sustainability at the core. 30% of our conversations at the board is about that. I was on the board until recently of FNC Investment Trust. We've had 20-year track record of engagement with company and responsible investing, and that is very present through all the investments that we've made up to date. And it's part of the conversation. In the olden days, I was on the board for almost 10 years. It was once a year you would get the presentation. Yeah. Now it's at every meeting, and you know the dashboard is there, front and center, and right at the beginning of the conversation at the board meetings we have those conversations. Whereas on smaller businesses, it is a little bit the tail wagging the dog, in the sense that it's the reporting requirements, which of course I'm very happy with. And you could see that there's a lot of tension, because it's like, oh my God, we need to report on this at the annual report. There's hardly any content. How are we going to make this up? And then increasingly saying, okay, we're not going to be in this situation next year. We're going to do a bit more in order to be able to populate that section of the annual report.
And I think one of the key things that came out of the conference was the fact that you have ecosystems with big companies working with smaller companies, and increasingly, if scope 3 is going to be one of the huge issues going forward, and we know that 82% of most companies' emissions are actually in scope 3, the question then becomes, how do small companies work with bigger companies in order to be integrated? And I think one of the key things that came out was, whether you're a big or a small company, you've absolutely got to get the narrative right. Because we talked a lot about sort of what are the opportunities and challenges going forward, and it seems to me visible leadership, get the narrative right, becomes hugely important. The other thing which I think came out of a lot of the discussion around sustainability was the word collaboration, because you have to work with partners. And Francesca made an interesting point right in the beginning, which was, data is going to be absolutely fundamental. If you're going to have data, the analytics, the power to be able to understand how you report, where your scope 3 are, you've got to be working with partners to be able to have that data and that analytics. So to me, I think it's, whether you're big or small, the narrative and getting the analytics and the data right and collaborating with the right partners is going to be fundamental to being able to drive that scale, those scale plays going forward.
Just to build on this, like, somebody's scope 3 is somebody else's scope 1. So really, you know, it is important that you collaborate on the data sharing in a way that's verifiable, in a way that's robust, because otherwise it's a huge amount of work, and it's a lot more effective and efficient if you do this properly by sharing the data.
And if we build that back into one of the big themes, I think, that people have talked about recently, which is global supply chains, how do you build resilience into it? Understanding, therefore, who are your supply chain partners, how data is going to work, how you build resilience into that. That is good business in today's world, and sustainability plays right into that. So I think a lot of the themes around, as I say, resilience, how do we make sure that we're working effectively with the partners so that we truly do understand end-to-end scope 3 emissions? That is part of the way businesses are going to have to basically operate as we look over the next sort of 1, 2, 5 years.
Did you agree with the view that AI will be a game changer around this? Because there are these waves of technologies that come through, and they are hailed as the great panacea, and you're smiling there because it happens, doesn't it? And kind of you get these kind of phases that occur. I mean, from your perspective, Mark, to come to you, for, do you think this is the real deal? So when the the power of AI to solve some of the challenges around data aggregation on scope three. Do you really think this is, we should be excited about how it supports companies?
I think we should be excited about AI, but I always say to people that the critical thing is it's not about single technologies, but it's about combinations of technologies. Yeah. And I think that I think the really critical thing is real-time data. Real-time data is the big game changer. And in order to do that, you've got to have sensing technology, you need cloud-based technologies, you need artificial intelligence. But underneath it all, you need clear, coherent data architecture. Because if you put garbage in, you get garbage out. And AI is
we
no
didn't even
different.
Talk about synthetic data, did we, and some of the challenges around that, which is a huge area.
Which is another sort of area. Yeah. But so I think AI has the potential for being very, very significant game changers. There are examples that we've heard about, for example, how you can use cloud-based artificial intelligence, whether it's in terms of monitoring what's going on in the natural world, or whether it's looking at sort of certain aspects of everything from soil temperatures through to sort of what's going on in the atmosphere around sort of trails from aeroplanes. So I think AI is a tool, but the tool can only be used if you've got the other systems and processes in place that enable you to make good decisions on the back of it. I think the key message to boards and to executive teams is that the pace of technology change, if you just go through 5G, 6G, real-time data, Internet of Things, quantum computing, artificial intelligence, is just going to go through the roof. And over the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years, that is just going to continue to play out. And whether you're an executive team or a board, you need to be on top of those issues and really thinking about how AI can impact the types of decisions that you're making within your organisation. And that for me is one of the sort of, the ways that boards need to stay current is going to be very important in terms of learning about the potential impacts of these technologies.
Okay. How do boards stay current, Francesca, from your perspective? Because we talked as well about the pressure on non-executive directors.
Need to mug up, basically. You need to go and learn. You need to go to forums like these where you do end up learning from each other, from the speakers. There's not enough time to be able to absorb everything that's out there on the new trends. And it's you need to be able to spend time on it. And it's up to you as a non-executive director to create the time to make sure that you stay current.
I was speaking to a CEO, and the person was saying that they're really frustrated with this constant need to bring in an expert. And you used to have, remember the digital NED, that was a thing. Now it's the sustainability NED. And it's like, that's not the way to solve this problem. It needs to be a collective responsibility. Where do you stand on that?
I think it's impossible to be expert in everything, but I do think that you need a critical mass. So you can't have just one person talk about sustainability. You need like 30% of the board members who are sufficiently knowledgeable to be able to build on each other's questions. You can't just have the one. But I we're going to have to concur and divide and conquer, because it's just such a massive thing. You also may need more NEDs, but
so the actual structure of the boards
you're seeing
more committees and subcommittees, aren't you?
Yeah, so subcommittees is good because those are working sessions, but you can't just delegate it to a subcommittee. It needs to float back up to the board. And at the board, you need more than one expert in a particular field.
Okay.
And I think there are lots of different ways that one can sort of learn in the organisation. I think board members have to learn how to stay relevant. I think in today's current sort of pace of change, I think you become irrelevant over a 3 to 4 year time frame if you're not picking up some of the sort of signals as what's going on. And even if, based on today's discussion, if you look at what's happening around climate action, what's happening around the natural world, what's happening in the digital technology space, these are huge evolutions that we need to go through. Boards need to learn, but actually the executive teams also need to be driving a lot of that sort of understanding. And the danger is that if you get locked into a very sort of strong operational focus on the short term, you don't spend enough time thinking about what are some of those medium longer term issues. And the trick is not to be thinking about always the long term. I always sort of say to people, the most important thing is the medium term. because the medium term is near enough that you actually have to begin to think about what the actions are. You don't need to be thinking about what's going to happen in 2030, but you do need to be thinking about what's going to, what are some of the things that are going to really impact the business in 2024, 25, 26. And that is the really interesting, I think, area where you can have discussions on the board, particularly when you get into things like strategy away days, or begin to think about, okay, what is it that will help us to sort of understand some of those insights and trends. I also think technology and AI and strategic intelligence are ways that you can understand some of the micro trends, because actually understanding key evidence points behind micro trends and using intelligence and data will help us, I think, as non-execs and executives to be more current with what's going on.
Okay. Something that occurred to me during the sessions is that we constantly say that the pace is getting faster for businesses and boards, and yet when we look at some of the targets that you, some of the targets we've set around net zero, we're so far behind, it's untrue. Where do business need to speed up?
Well, I think it's partly about pace, but I think a lot of it is about understanding complexity. And it seems to me that one of the ways that we need as boards and executives is to try to think of things in much more systemic and holistic ways. And actually, if you really think about that, it usually is a combination of five dimensions. It's some of it is around the macroeconomics in which we operate. A lot in today's world is geopolitical. And I think the whole sort of political business overlap is becoming increasingly more important. You need to understand that. There's clearly the environmental dimension, and you've got technology. And of course, we've got communities and aging populations, which plays to the S in ESG. So to me, when you're making decisions and when you're thinking about the pace of change, actually the really important thing is to understand how that decision is being impacted through those five different lenses. And that, I think, helps you to understand something about the complexities. And then, of course, the other big issue is what are the, if you like, the consequences of the actions, and really trying to understand that, because that is also a critical sort of dimension here in terms of thinking through sort of consequences and that ability to adapt going forward, because that is also going to be, I think, a critical factor given some of the trends that we see.
Okay. How far can you look ahead in this environment when you're having conversations on the board, given the short-term pressures?
I think you can look to 2030, but you can also, but you have to look at next year and what is it, because often we think, oh, long-term, this, the our end point is going to be the most important, which is net zero. But actually, what's really important is to do something now, whatever that is, even if then you need to readjust.
You talked about how you can change behaviours through being a Remco chair, and
yes,
then to tie that into ESG goals.
Well, absolutely. So Remco is one way. Obviously, you need to embed it into the strategy, and you need to have long-term and short-term goals. And REM can do that. You can put sustainability in the bonus scheme, and usually that's probably the more frequent. In my experience, and the ones that I'm on, we put it mainly in the bonus scheme, but you can have it also on the LTIP, and then you can make sure that it cascades down to the organization. And again, none of those particular initiatives will change the universe, but it will go, it's one small step towards it, and at least it's measurable, at least it's benchmarkable, and at least it's something that people can implement now. And I think getting into the habit, developing the muscle to sort of do something about sustainability on a daily basis is just as important as getting to net zero.
So I think, Mark, two things. One is that we know all the evidence suggests that most companies are off the pace in terms of achieving their net zero targets. And so the question then becomes looking very much at the roadmaps and how can we, as Francesca said, incentivize our executives to make sure that they are tracking against the roadmap to get to net zero. That's one. And I'm a great believer in also looking very closely at what's happening at the mid-tier management level, because the mid-tier management levels are the key operators of the business. They're the people who sort of make and drive performance. They're the people making day-to-day decisions. And if they're doing the right things about the sort of the sustainable dimension of the business, then you have more confidence that the overall sort of net zero plan will track in the right particular way. So yes, incentives are one sort of dimension, but I think our other key message is you've got to have the data, the processes, as well as the incentives all lined up to achieve your sustainable goals.
And I'll come onto the subject of board alignment shortly, but again, to come into the sort of the systemic thinking that you were describing. So yesterday the conversation was, there was a lot of talk around decarbonisation. Mm-hmm. This morning we've talked about nature loss and biodiversity. Mm. Again, it's understanding how you knit those together, isn't it, if you're going to achieve these goals.
You have to understand where, if you like, your carbon footprint and your dependency on nature, where the sources of your carbon are. And clearly, if you look at how we're going to get to net zero, electrification is going to be a huge, huge issue. And actually, I think the biggest constraint that we've got in the UK is not the growth of renewables. The biggest constraint we've got in the UK is the grid system. Can't get enough connections made fast enough to get, if you like, increasingly, if you look at the world today, it is going increasingly more decentralized. Decentralized energy, decentralized intelligence. Where is it? Chips go on the periphery. That's embedded intelligence on the periphery. You need the networks for a decarbonized world to work. And I think that getting the planning systems, the integration right, particularly around grid, is going to be absolutely fundamental to decarbonization going forward. And if I was saying there's one thing that we need to do going forward, that would be the sort of area where I would really push over the next 5 years, because I don't think we're moving fast enough in that play.
No.
Also, there are other industries or other countries where we can take notes. You know, if you look at how Norway has electrified so fast and so quickly and so widespread, you know, there's some learnings there that we could just go and save a ton of time by just replicating it. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of activity in this space, and not all of it is in the UK, and we just need to sort of like, where is it done effectively, efficiently, quickly, and then go and take notes and try to replicate that in a relevant fashion.
Okay.
Because I think that there's a lot of time wasted saying, what's the perfect solution? Well, actually, let's not make perfect.
Let's look at what others are doing.
Let's look and sort of just copy shamelessly. If it's good, why not? I mean.
Yeah. We talked about board alignment, and we ran a poll this morning, and it was interesting. It was pretty much split 50-50 in terms of, are your board aligned on the strategy? Why do you think that is? Why do you think there is that split?
Well, we've come out of COVID. There's a lot of operational pressure at the moment. If you listen to what people are saying, clearly things like the rise in interest rates have impacted capital decisions, rates of return. And whether you go and look and talk to the offshore wind people, who will basically say they've made decisions on investing in offshore wind, and now the cost of capital is well above their 7%. That means that some of the investments that they've made have to be renegotiated and re-looked at. So I think that there are some fundamental changes. Post-COVID, cost of capital's gone up, interest rates have gone up. There are questions about short-term, there are questions about, are we on track to deliver our long-term goals? All of these are fairly fundamental questions. Then you get to the point about, it's alignment at multiple levels. It's, have you got alignment with the board? Is the board aligned with the executive? Is the executive team able to align its middle tier with it? And I think critically, all of this debate is no longer about what goes on within an organisation. You have to think of the organisation beyond the four walls and really think of the organisation, as we talked earlier, about scope 3 and the integrated value chain. Those are massive alignment issues. And if you start saying it's all about, okay, 82% of your scope 3 emissions is part of your total emissions picture, you've got lots of different dimensions to alignment. Now, whether people were saying all of that when they answered the question, I don't know. But what I do know is that I think alignment and getting enough alignment around board, executive, is going to be a huge issue going forward, because if you get that right, I think that's a powerful enabler to achieving the sustainability goals.
I think also there is education and an understanding of the facts. There is not everybody knows the same fact, and therefore, you know, there is a process that needs to happen. I know on the board, some people have a better understanding of this than others, and those who don't need to actually sort of educate themselves and sort of or read or understand or speak to the right people to be able to get everybody's knowledge and understanding of where we're at, what we need to do, and what's at stake. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why there is misalignment.
What kind of culture do you need in the board to be on the board to grapple with all of these different forces that we're describing?
Well, you obviously need transparency, you need candor, you need a certain amount of strategic thinking, you need the right skills, you need a number of things on the board to be able to get there. And then you kind of need to work together. Now, COVID was great because it slapped us all together and had to work together. But we need to continue that kind of collaboration. And that spirit that actually these things are not going to happen unless we're all on the bus together.
And I think, just adding to that, I think the chair has a critical role, because part of looking at the board agendas over the course of the next 12 months would be to say, let's look at some of the strategic versus operational discussion topics that we're going to have on the board agenda going forward. So I think that sort of the chairs have pretty key responsibilities for sort of thinking about that balance between sort of the operational, the strategic, and the sustainable, and how do you do that in a holistic way. A lot of people say we need to make sure that sustainability is part of the core DNA of the business. And I think that one of the things the board can do is sort of look at various sort of presentations that are coming in or discussion topics that are coming in and saying, well, where is the sustainability? Where is the biodiversity angle on this particular topic?
Asking
those questions. I also think the other thing that we haven't perhaps talked to that much about is that this, we've talked about upskilling and in the boardroom, but I think this whole question about the talent base, the upskilling, and are we doing enough with our key people in our organisation? Everybody talks about the technology and the technology drivers, but actually the imperative behind technology change is to upskill the people even faster in order to be able to leverage and use the technology. Because technology, again, critical enabler, but it's not the ultimate driver. You need the skills to be able to drive and use the technology.
Yes, there was an interesting comment that, you know, technology and AI, what's going to happen is that sort of the average is going to be upskilled very, very quickly. And therefore, you know, and that goes for competition, that goes for everything.
It's a leveler.
It's a leveler. And therefore, in order to have a competitive advantage, you kind of need to do a little bit extra.
Yeah, I remember speaking to a CEO in the insurance sector about that. It's okay, how do you differentiate if you're using the same technology? What's your relationship with your customer? What does it mean for your brand? And the whole question around skilling and the workforce, I think that's a whole separate podcast.
It is, and it's again where technology can be a huge enabler, because I think whether it's augmented reality, artificial intelligence, there are ways that you can upskill very, very rapidly. And also, interestingly, the more you've got real-time data in play, that the speed at which you're able then to make decisions, again, I think is a powerful game changer for your business model.
One thing we haven't touched on is the cultural health of the organisation. Does that also fall under the board's remit now? Is that something that the board needs to be looking at?
Definitely, because if there is a problem in the behaviours of the individuals.
And we've seen some high profile examples. We don't need to name names, but
no, exactly. Yeah. Where basically, you know, an otherwise perfectly competent CEO is having to be ousted just because there was some problem with his behaviour or her behaviour. It derails the agenda on the board and the performance of the company for unnecessary reasons. So, you know, better to be working on this upstream and making sure that everybody is aligned and that the workforce is working in an environment that they understand what the behaviours and the values that are expected.
It's a business risk, isn't it?
It is.
And it needs to be treated with the same
seriousness. And I think also in today's world we're seeing a big trend around health, wellness, mental sort of well-being, and it seems to me that it's absolutely fundamental for boards to understand sort of the well-being of their employees, looking at employee satisfaction, looking at retention rates, looking at sort of how those dimensions are going. And Because if you've got, I think, a healthy organisation, that's a very powerful sort of enabler.
You can run much faster.
Yeah.
And speed is the key. Okay, I will wrap it up there. So thank you to Mark Spellman and Francesca Exery. I look forward to our next podcast and hearing from you soon.